Welcome to Hot Plate, the conversations we should be having about our food and drink. I'm your host, Mirella Amato. This week on The Hot Plate, we take a closer look at how Canadians eat. We'll talk about food security, Canada's food guide, and distilling food scraps. Then, to lighten things up, on Curious Kitchen, we'll ask, where's the booze? Joshna.
Mm-hmm.
This year, for the first time since, I think, the 40s? Was it the 40s?
It was the 50s. Yes. It was, or maybe it was 40 years ago.
Let's just say a long time.
A long time.
The government, or the powers that be, yes. Who is it?
Federal Ministry of Health.
Has issued a new food guide.
They have.
It's not super
Canada's
new.
Canada's food guide has gotten a facelift, a review, a makeover, if you will.
Earlier this year, right?
January. Big news. Very exciting. Much anticipated by those of us who work in the space.
I must admit, the food guide is not something I ever
Huh? Even as a kiddo in school and stuff, do you have that memory of being taught about food with the guide?
I do now.
Okay.
Certainly, when I went back and looked at it, and I saw the
drawings and the rainbow business, right?
And I will admit that I certainly, with every meal that I have, I always make sure that there is a protein component, a vegetable component, and a starch component, which may or may not be a beer.
Ha,
it happens.
I like it.
And I don't always have dairy. I think, okay. was dairy a specific separate one?
Meat and alternatives.
So it was in the alternatives.
Yeah. So meat and alternatives, protein, vegetables, and starch. And grains, yes. Grains, right? It was fruits and vegetables and grains.
And I don't know if you looked at it recently, but in the meat and proteins section,
yes.
There's, you know, like clearly poultry, clearly
yes,
a cut of beef, a fish. And then there's like these white dots.
Yes.
I'm like, is that beans? What is
it? It's meat and alternatives because I think at one point nuts and cheese were trying to find their way in there, right? It's just like little funny.
Little random white dots.
Is it beans?
Dots.
Is it lentils? Is
like,
it peanuts?
What is
it?
Yeah. Doesn't matter. Just eat your pork and your
just eat the
your
beef.
Meat,
exactly.
Right? Oh, Lord.
Exactly. It's very sort of token inclusion, right?
Whereas the new one is different, right? In its approach.
They really well. I mean, I think one of the smartest things they did was actually just put a photograph of food.
Right.
Right. It's fresh, real, enticing, colorful food.
That didn't even hit me.
Right.
Yeah.
That when I saw that, I was like, finally. Finally, show us a plate that is something that we want to dive into, right? Because all these other sort of hand drawings and line drawings that we've seen are just sort of random whole ingredients in lists, right? Whereas like, no. Our food guide, like it's always a plate.
Right.
Yes. Right? It always has to arrive on a plate. So show us the plate.
Yeah. And the other, now that you mention it, because my favorite thing was the fact that a full half of the plate is veggies,
yes,
which is how I like to eat.
Yes.
And we were talking about this in the earlier episode,
you
know, there's not enough vegetable on the plate, a little too much of other things.
That's exactly it.
And with the old depiction, they did have different amounts. So they would say, you know, four to five vegetables and, you know, fewer starches and fewer meats, but they had equal visual space.
Yes, they did. Everything had its quarter of the circle, as it would be, right?
Yes. So this
but
is a
that's
much
a
better
great point because
visual representation.
The servings of fruits and vegetables have always been higher, but I think that plate was the first time that we could recognize what that meant.
I agree.
Right?
It just looked right.
It does. It does. And they've made some really fantastic moves in the suggestion about the foods that people should be eating. The thing that I'm most excited about is a real push towards wholesome food.
Yes.
And thus a conscious push away from processed food.
I have to say, you know, we can criticize it as much as we want, but it has fascinated me throughout my adult life because
mm-hmm.
I did internalize it on some level. Looking around how few people bother to have balanced meals.
Right.
You know, they did their best, but it didn't come across in any way. It didn't seem to have any effect. You know, I'm seeing people, not only people, but restaurants with the plate has not a vegetable on it.
I know. I know. And I say to people all the time when I'm teaching classes or when I'm teaching people how to cook a steak, mm-hmm. I give them this mouthful because I'm like, yes, a steak. To me, a steak is a luxury more because you're going to spend more money for a beautiful piece of well-raised meat.
Yes.
That's the luxurious piece. And you're going to mm-hmm. use butter and baste it and have a richness that you can't. That's not an everyday thing. But to me, the problem is eat your steak, but make sure that there's a pile of greens on the plate beside it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Don't just eat
or
the steak.
Or some mushrooms.
Something, right? Like help your body out.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's not what you're eating, but it's also, yes, but it's also what you're not eating.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's not about never eat a steak. It's eat a steak, but also remember to eat some vegetables with that steak.
The other thing I really loved about I wrote them down, was the sort of other guidelines that are there.
Yes. So, the B-side.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cook more often. Love that. Mm-hmm. Eat meals with others.
Super important.
No one does that.
Nope.
It's so weird.
And I'm delighted that Health Canada has understood that there's a health implication.
Absolutely.
Right? That is really, really important. A lot of people have sort of said that they think it's a bit fluffy and nonsense, whereas I actually see
some really
visionary thinking behind these suggestions, because our suffering is largely connected to a lot of this stuff, as well as whatever sort of nutrient deficiency we're talking about.
Take time to eat is one of them.
Nice.
Notice when you are hungry and when you are full, which is something I struggle with all the time, but it is important.
And it's about full and satisfied.
Yeah.
Not always the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, it's great mm-hmm. to bring it up and then be aware of food marketing, which is a sweeping statement.
I was going to say, it's quite a stroke of a thing.
They did it. People will now be aware of food marketing.
Done.
Check.
Done. But listen, to that point,
yes.
And I think maybe it's come up in a conversation with us before, I like that because I firmly believe that we live in a time where the level of food literacy required to make decisions about your food is higher than it's ever been in human history.
Really?
Like, I can't think of another time where we've had to be so hyper aware of where things came from, how they were grown, what it's included. Is it GMO? Is it da-da-da-da? Is it going to be, you know what I mean? Because pre-pesticides, we just grew food and it was all organic and we didn't mm-hmm. mess around, right? But now, right? The level, the amount of information you need to have to make good decisions about what to put in your mouth mm-hmm. is huge.
Yes.
And perhaps even worse is the actual resting literacy is the lowest it's ever been.
What do you mean?
Right? We are the most dismissive of our food than we have ever been. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We pay the least amount of our money, time, and effort. Right? We want the cheapest thing off you. We want the quickest, cheapest, lowest, which is why we shove food in our mouths in the car and all, you know?
And people don't cook.
That not at all. Because it's a waste of time, right? People think it's a waste of time.
It's so odd.
And so that
people say it takes too long.
Yeah.
You can cook a meal from scratch in 25 minutes.
You absolutely can.
Easy.
You absolutely can.
A well-balanced meal. This idea that it takes too much time is confusing to me.
Yes, it's a priorities issue, and it's that gap around literacy. So kudos to Health Canada. Thank you for a great start. I really like the look of this new food guide.
We'll see where it goes. Sylvain Charlebois, a food researcher at Dalhousie University, is quoted as saying, "Over time, we do believe that there's going to be an increasing number of Canadian households that will become food insecure if they are to follow the new food guide." So, Joshna, I read that Walrus article you forwarded to me about food insecurity.
Right.
It's been haunting me.
It's heavy, right? The story about the depth and the level of food insecurity in Canada mm-hmm. is a major problem, right? 4 million of the 37 million of us do not have good, safe, affordable access to food.
That number is staggering.
It's really high. And while the focus of this piece was Canada, it's important to know that this phenomenon exists throughout the entire continent.
Of course.
Right? And in fact, it's even worse in the U.S.
Yeah, and I imagine in some parts of Canada.
Right? And the numbers jump exponentially when we talk about our friends in the north.
Oh, dear.
Right? Southern Canadian communities have mm-hmm. one level, but there is steep and fierce food insecurity among Inuit people.
That's not acceptable.
It's really not. It's really not. Tell me, I mean, it's a really big issue, but tell me what hit you about it. what felt most horrible?
I mean, it was all horrible.
Yeah.
The one part that really stuck with me is that this is such an issue that there's different levels of food insecurity. And I remember, so I guess the least serious level is, am I going to run out of food before my next paycheck?
Before the next check,
which was like mild insecurity. Mm-hmm. And then the one level deeper, which was, aren't always eating as much as they need.
Right.
Or maybe having
skipping
to
meals.
Switch what they eat. And then the third level was, you know, missing meals and just being hungry
just
all the time.
Just really empty cupboards.
Yeah. To me, that really highlights, I mean, if it's such a serious issue, is that there are levels of it.
Right.
It says two things. First of all, it's very serious. Second of all, we know about it. We've been studying it.
Exactly.
So what's next, guys?
Yes. When are we going to do something about it?
Right?
Right. It has always, obviously, food insecurity, right, or food security is something that I have invested pretty much the majority of my career into working around, right? My time at The Stop was all about community food security, right? And really coming to terms with reasons that communities and people do not have good access to food.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of them. However, the vast majority of them will rest on money.
Yes.
Right? Their skills and knowledge, geographic, you know, determinants, there's all these things, but really it's about the fact that people cannot afford to feed themselves well.
I think that was clear
right?
in the article.
It's really that. And the what is compelling to me is just really thinking through your own budgeting, right? After you pay for your housing,
mm-hmm.
right? And we know you can't pay half your rent.
Yep.
You got to pay the whole thing. The next big chunk of your spending is your food.
Right.
Right. And so, and that becomes your first expendable budget line. Mm-hmm. Right. That's the first because you don't, there are no have to's necessarily. That's where things can start sliding.
Right. So before that, you right? might have like your bills.
Yes.
Or your medication.
That's exactly. Or, you know what I mean? The transport or your kid's school or, you know,
yeah.
whatever else it has to be. But the food can be a thing that is constantly pushed down.
Yes.
Right. Because you generally can find a cheaper option.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Whereas, I mean, that's the moment where your own food security starts to plummet,
mm-hmm.
right? Because your dependence on less nutritious food, and it snowballs into a really sort of it's a really difficult life.
Yes,
right. Let's just say it's really difficult to live while hungry.
It's difficult to function.
That's it.
When hungry.
That's it.
Not to mention, and they address this in the article, but it's true, all the different health concerns, you know, the cost, if you want to, you know, be all government and budgety.
Sure.
The cost at the end of all this, of all these people who aren't eating enough with, you know, the conditions that they'll develop mm-hmm. at the end of the day.
The snowball of health impacts, right?
Is way more expensive than addressing it at
100%,
the beginning.
100%, right? 100%. And this, it's a great thing to bring up because this was in fact the one problem that I had with the new assertion of Canada's food guide.
Really?
Right?
It's
we've just spoken about a lot of positivity about it and mm-hmm. I stand by that.
Yes.
The one glaring unaddressed piece is if our federal government mm-hmm. via Health Canada has decided that this is the way Canadians should eat, what have they built in? What measures have they taken? What systems have they built to ensure or even investigate whether or not all 37 million of us can, in fact, eat this way?
Tell me more about that, because when I look at it, you know, for the changes from the old food guide to the new food guide, I'm seeing, you know, less meat, more meat alternatives like beans, which are less costly. I'm seeing some things that might make it easier, but of course, I can't
so
see it as deeply as you can.
That is an accurate read. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that sort of intercepts that with a challenge mm-hmm. is skills and knowledge.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, the lentils, yes, they're cheaper than a piece of meat, but the likelihood of somebody knowing how to cook lentils is quite much lower than somebody who may know how to cook a piece of something.
Not to mention the time commitment.
Yes.
To prepare lentils.
That adjustment.
Because of course, people who are food insecure have so much time on
their
hands.
Put something in the crock pot. Exactly. And so that becomes a real challenge, right? The shift and the transition is not an easy one to make.
Huh.
Right?
Yeah.
And the real danger that we run into is this idea that good, wholesome, fresh, real food is a sort of elitist story.
It's interesting you should say that, because the one thing that I was that popped up for me when I was reading this Walrus article is my best friend has a couple of kids in school right now, and there have been some rules passed around what kids can have in their lunches. Everything has to be healthy. Yes. And her children, and she is not food insecure.
Right.
You know, but sometimes, I, you know, someone's birthday, she'll slip in an eclair or something. So we're not talking about that. But, and her children are being shamed for what they have. And being told, you can't eat that. It's not healthy.
Oh, no. That, like, I feel a rage of fire inside of me.
So in that sense, you know, and, you know, again, for my best, not an issue, but I was just imagining, again, and what you're saying about the food guide, you set these high standards and you're enforcing these standards, but not assisting people who
not
need to meet those standards.
Exactly.
And then shaming them.
For not making the mark.
Yeah.
Right. And we see that cycle.
That's
right.
Not good.
It happens to us just in mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think maybe there's an acute thing happening with schools, but it's everywhere. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I have to constantly say that processed packaged food is the least desirable food to be eating.
Yes.
Right. In terms of its benefit to your body.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of people, that is what is affordable.
Yeah.
Right. And so we cannot be so serious about demonizing it, because for some folks, that's every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they are, and we need to make space for that until the system
or
changes
give them
and
more
the
money.
World, right?
Yeah.
Or just give people more money, right? And
because they slowed down the raising of minimum wage now,
they sure
didn't
did.
They?
Yep.
They
and
slowed down some
and social assistance rates are not where they might need to be to actually support people to live a good life. But the fact that that consideration was not made is where the problem lies.
So what are some of the solutions?
Right. There is, unfortunately, it's a bigger bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there is this mega attitude culture shift that needs to happen, right? We need, because the truth is that it's not just that wholesome, good, fresh food is expensive. It's too easy to say that. Yes, the price tags may be higher.
Yes.
Than you know, other food that you might be buying. But the actual truth out there is the fact that the processed industrial food is artificially cheap.
Yes.
Right? And I say that a lot, and people roll their eyes at me and tell me that I have all the nice rationalizations for all my weird hippie arguments. But it really is, in fact, the truth, right? Because the developing world and the planet are picking up the tab on our cheap food. And so the idea of buying a fresh whole piece of food in itself is actually not expensive. But because you can see this lower ticket item, right? Because a $1 burger exists, it completely distorts.
I think we can put
distorts.
Burger in quotation marks
indeed,
there.
Indeed, indeed, right?
No meat in the meat.
Precisely. It skews our understanding of what is appropriate for us to be spending on our food.
And excuse the government's understanding, I think more importantly, of how much subsidy is needed.
This is it.
Or how much assistance is needed.
Right. And one of the lovely bits that I found recently, just in doing a bit of research, is a lovely team of folks at Dalhousie University did a study and connection to folks, Canadians, in response to the new assertion of the food guide. And one of the great things that they came up with was the idea that it may be too expensive for all Canadians. It's dangerous to say it like that.
Yes.
Right? Because too expensive suggests that it is a frivolous plan.
Yes.
When it's not at all. Right? But people's capacity, it's too expensive for people's budgets and their capacity. Right? Because this readjustment has been made, cheaper food is available. The switching of this whole idea is really what needs to happen, right? And revaluing people, really, unfortunately, right?
Revaluing food.
100%, right?
Again, on a government level.
At that level, right? Yeah. Access to good, proper, whole food is, in fact, a basic human right.
I agree.
Right? It is. And the fact that I've always said that in the world, we can only be so happy about the fact that we have, so we know we walk around with computers in our pockets and, you know what I mean, and incredible feats of technological success, yet we still have not actually figured out how to make sure that all 7 point whatever billion of us have a good meal at least once a day.
And
right?
not even it here, is, it, right?
It's
in Canada.
Shame. Exactly.
At a very basic level.
It's in Toronto. It's down the street. This is not about Africa or some, you know, other over there notion. It is here in our community. It's our neighbors who are going to bed hungry. And that is a real, real problem.
And their children.
And their children, right? Because hungry children mean hungry mothers.
Yeah.
Right? There's no way a mom or a parent, I'm sure a father feels this as well, will eat and not feed their kid.
No, no way.
Right? Mm-hmm. There's food. Two people are hungry. Only one person's worth of food. The kid's getting the food. So food insecurity in this country is a massive issue. I believe it is completely shameful that we have this many hungry people living in here, in our community, in this wealthy, wealthy city.
And equally shameful, it's not being talked about enough. So thank you for bringing it up, Joshna.
Thank you. Thanks for making space.
Today, Joshna, I wanted to talk about what appears to be a growing trend in beer and spirits.
Let's hear it.
And that is to make spirits or beer out of discarded foods.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I have come across 5 or 6 articles about this in the past month.
No way.
About all kinds of people using, you know, day-old bagel, all kinds of baked goods from, you know, food banks at the end of the day, things that hasn't been distributed. Things that, you know, they weren't able to get rid of.
Yeah.
Sushi rice from sushi restaurants, that sort of thing. All kinds of articles, but there were 2 in particular that intrigued me. So I want to talk about those 2.
Yes.
And they're very contrasting. One of them is from right here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a group near Ottawa that decided to make vodka out of milk waste.
Oh, milk waste? Oh.
Yes. So interestingly, it appears that with the dairy industry having become so proficient at making cheese and making yogurt,
sure,
using the proteins, using the cream, we're left with this this product called milk permeate. Do you know what that is?
So sexy.
Permeate.
Yes.
Apparently,
I don't know what that is at all.
It's full of sugar. Apparently, milk has lactose in it.
Okay.
And this represents about a third, according to them, of what comes out of the cow, and it is discarded.
Right.
It's
and not
away.
Much fat?
No.
Right?
So
I'm guessing
this is without
no
the fat and
right.
without the proteins. All that stuff can be put to good use.
Okay.
So this is a liquid that is rich in sugar, not much else. And we have many dairy farmers.
Many.
In this country. So that's a lot of milk permeate.
Right.
And so this company has decided to make vodka from this milk permeate.
Okay, I like that idea a lot.
They call it Vodcow.
Of course they do.
You got a pun. You got a pun with spirits.
If you can, you got it, right?
Yeah, but is that a thing in food, too? In drink? Everyone puns.
Oh, 100%.
Okay. 100%.
It's so charming and hilarious,
It's just a hospitality thing in general.
And people who also are connected to headlines.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
And titles, and you know what I mean? It's like the Baron of Brunoise, or you know what I mean? Whatever it has to be. Yes.
I sent them a little note. I said they should try making a Cosmopolitan.
Oh.
I went there.
I love that. I'm so interested in
anyway, this. Anyway, they had to approach a university because apparently it's not that easy to ferment out this particular type of sugar. And I can confirm that from beer, where if you make beer with lactose sugar, the yeast will not ferment the lactose.
So they partnered with
the university. They found a way to ferment it. And the result is a crystal clear vodka.
Whoa.
That apparently is doing really well in taste tests.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm very intrigued. I'm a fan of the vodka.
I need to try it.
Me too.
I'm so curious.
Interested. That sounds like my mind says that's delicious.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
Maybe this milk is the sugar? One vodka that you can drink, Joshna.
Maybe.
That won't take you to that horrible place.
Right.
I remember.
That friendly vodka.
That's how
vodka.
To get secrets out of Joshna.
It really is.
Feed her vodka.
It really is. That could be an interesting episode.
The other thing that I came across, which was fantastic, is this guy named Bjorn Steiner.
Bjorn.
And he's in Europe, in Iceland, actually, apologies. And he describes himself as a product designer and a professional dumpster diver.
Of course he does.
And I have to admit, I love what he's doing.
Yeah.
He goes to larger food importers.
Okay.
Will go into their dumpsters and find, you know, a huge pile of bananas mm-hmm. or cherries or whatever happens to be there.
Right.
And then he will take that, and that's his catch of the day.
Okay.
Calls it the catch of a day. And he will just ferment that little batch of banana from
oh,
that. And it's, you know,
this
small
little
batch.
Bespoke situation.
Exactly.
Oh.
Isn't that delightful?
That's so nice.
Oh.
That is so nice.
I love the name, catch of the day.
Totally.
I love the idea that because these are brandies, and so they'll be single fruit brandies, each one.
Oh.
And it's just so fun. I love the whole,
I love
like,
that.
And he, you know, hand writes all the labels and he's turned it into this super fancy thing.
I want to taste them all. I wonder what his distribution process is.
I wonder.
Right? There's people on the inside. There's clearly got to be a community on the inside who connects to him. And it's just like, just a subscription model would really be the smartest, right?
For sure. And, you know, he shows his equipment. I've seen the video. It's tiny. So it's very, very small batches. I don't think he needs to look
so
far
great.
To find people. But
well
are there
done.
Any food initiatives that are, is there any way to reuse food into food? Or does it just have to be turned into booze?
No, there's lots of ways to reuse food into food.
Okay.
Right? There's sort of simple stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like we see a lot of lovely scenarios where you're making like pastry pockets with mushroom and broccoli stems.
Okay.
Right? Because it's
yes.
the stuff that is always sort of tossed and not paid attention to. So if we just reduce, we pull that.
Okay.
Hopefully it doesn't actually get to the dumpster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It originally will head out in the organics bin. But if you can rework it, and truthfully, I mean, people don't realize that on a stalk of broccoli, if you take your veg peeler and just peel down two or three layers, you get to a very tender, sweet
right.
thing.
Right. I'm just confused because
right?
I eat the stalks of both
I
my broccoli.
Know, I know, but you are not the
mushrooms?
Average
so
bear,
like, what,
my darling.
Am I doing it wrong?
No, you're doing it super right.
Okay.
But a lot of people just want the trees on the broccoli and they just want the cap on the mushroom.
They even sell that. The broccoli crowns.
Precisely.
I'm like, where's
right?
the rest of the broccoli?
Yeah.
That's so weird.
It's, and so these are the sort of nice things to mm-hmm. do there. In fact, one of my pals, Chef Ricky Casipe of Ricky and Olivia fame here in the city.
Okay.
He started making taco shells out of chicken skins.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Taco shells out of chicken skins. So chicken skin tacos.
That sounds
right?
delicious.
So exactly. So the chicken skin, you can sandwich it between two sheet pans
mm-hmm.
and roast it in the oven, essentially, right?
Right?
That renders out the fat and it flattens it and crisps it up.
Mm-hmm.
So then, and then he would put like a bit of sort of, you know, you need something bright and acidic to cut through all the fat of the skin, but it is rich and perfect and delicious, right?
And texturally,
things,
that
so
just seems
so
satisfying.
Good, right? And you can do things like... sprinkle mushroom powder and stuff on top of it for, you know what I mean? For all
yes.
sort of augmented or chilies or nutritional yeasts and all this kind of stuff. And this is all stuff that would have just been chucked in the organics bin.
For sure.
Right? So there, I mean, listen, the truth is any good kitchen has the most minimal waste.
Right.
Right? Before global warming, before climate, you know, before any of it. That was just ethics of running a kitchen well.
That's what the soup of the day is for,
that's
right?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. But now, in this sort of this new climate and this new excitement and passions that we have around reducing waste, there are so many delightful, awesome things that can be done with food that would have been chucked or just broadening our understanding of what is not good.
Ready for Curious Kitchen, Joshna?
I am.
I love the big smile Ooh. That comes on your face when I pull out the glassware.
I love it when it's a thing to drink.
So don't be misled by the container because this is, I poured it in here. What we are sampling today is called Garden 108.
Okay.
Are you familiar with this?
Not at all.
I think you might be when I give you a little more information.
Okay.
It's made by a company called Seedlip.
Oh, yes.
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 So Seedlip.
Oh, you, okay.
Is a company that makes non-alcoholic distilled spirits.
Right.
Which I find really intriguing.
Me too.
So this one is called Garden 108. It is the more vegetal option. Can you smell that? It smells very green.
Hmm.
Getting some thyme. I get peas, but I know there's peas in it, so I think there's a power of suggestion there. Mm. I thought it'd be interesting to just taste it straight. This is normally made for mixing.
Okay.
But, you know, I have gin straight. I have bourbon straight. So let's see.
Tastes like thin juice.
Yeah. It's a bit of a tang to it. Like citrus.
There is some citrus.
Thyme. I'm getting some thyme.
The herbiness of the astringency. Totally.
Weird, eh?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would just drink this.
No.
And I will tell you for sure, at the price point, I would not just drink this.
Right.
It's a kind of expensive. But their suggestion is to have it with tonic water. So I bought some tonic water. It is a really delicate aroma.
Okay.
Apparently, this is made with hay and peas and hops. And what they do is they will, it's a proprietary process.
Hay and pea and, yes.
But they will soak or steep or macerate the different ingredients and then distill them and then,
independently.
and then blend them together. That's as much information as they have on the site. You know, it's made for blending. I don't think anyone's supposed to just drink it that. You really do miss the alcohol when you just drink it like that. Yeah.
But I like that notion that it's just another thing to blend.
It adds complexity.
So that temperance cocktails are more of a real thing.
For sure. So let's just, here you go. I'll let you decide how much tonic you'd like to throw in there.
Cheers.
Cheers. The bubbles are certainly lifting the aromas out from the Seedlip.
Oh, it really, no, tonic is a little bossy.
Mm-hmm.
But that is compelling.
Yeah.
All those flavors together? Right,
blending nicely with the quinine from the tonic water.
Because there's usually a little bitterness on the finish, but this Garden 108 is taking care of that.
It is, and
it's sort of letting the flavor continue, right? It's extending the flavor.
Those fresh notes are really lingering.
Oh, see, okay, Garden 108. I see what your job is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is quite good.
It's intriguing.
I can imagine. With ice and some mint leaves or cucumber slice or something.
Yes.
Riley, I love definitely cucumber slice. G&T. Cucumber slice for sure.
So what do you think? Would you find an excuse to grab a bottle or just stick to the occasional cocktail at the bar?
Well, there, I will be honest with you, the novelty of it has not escaped yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. How else can we use it?
Ah. Right? From a
flavor. Yeah, from a flavor perspective. Because there's something interesting about something that has because a lot of the reason why we cook with booze mm-hmm. are those residual flavors.
Yes.
And the things that are left after we've burned the alcohol off.
Mm.
Right? Which is, I think, where they were headed.
Yes.
With this, to make you a thing that has that flavor of booze, without the intensity of the booze.
Yes.
So, like, in a sauce or in a, you're right, or in a custard or something interesting like that, like, there's room there. Without the task of having to burn off the alcohol.
Right.
Right? And not that that's necessarily onerous, but
no,
there's something there, right? To like deglaze a pan. Think about a risotto,
mm-hmm.
right? Or something like that where we would take vermouth and I deglaze that pan. But all the things that I want out of the vermouth have nothing to do with the booze.
Right.
I actually want the booze out of there. And I want all those other beautiful, minerally, herby flavors.
As well as though some of the caramelization from the sugars, which this has no sugar.
It's no sugar?
It's just, no. Okay. It's just flavored water.
But
that's interesting. I will say.
There's something there.
They have cocktail recipes on their website. Maybe you need to offer up some food recipes.
Food stuff. Yeah. I'd be very curious about that.
It's growing on me.
Yeah. There's something there, right?
It's unique.
Also, I appreciate the innovation.
Thanks for listening. If you're enjoying The Hot Plate, rate us or leave a review. We'd love to hear from you. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Hot Plate Pod. Follow me at Beerology on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And follow Joshna at Joshna Maharaj on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you to Joshna for joining us today. Hot Plate is recorded at Eggplant Picture and Sound Studios. Our audio engineer is Brad Tigwell. Original music by Dave Bell. Hot Plate is produced by Mirella Amato, that's me, and Dennis Coyne. That's a wrap.